Where does knowledge come from? You guys know all this stuff. How much of that stuff was wired in at birth, and how much of it did you get from experience? How much can our minds and brains change over time? Can we go study a new thing and get a whole new brain region for that thing? Can we change the basic structure just by training or after brain damage? Can we think without language, right? How many of you have wondered about that question? Yeah, really basic question. Anya's answering it. Anya and some others, but Anya's doing a lot to answer that question. They're actually empirical answers to these long-standing deep questions that everyone wonders about. That's pretty cool. Somebody back there asked a while ago about awareness. Can we think, perceive, understand without awareness? How much can go on, like in the basement of the brain, when we don't even know what's going on down there? We'll consider all of these other cool questions. Okay, there's a bunch of things we won't cover in this course for various reasons that could have been in here and just aren't. There's only so much time. Motor control, it's really important to know how you do things like pick up objects and plan actions, and we're just not covering that. Something had to go. Subcortical function, this is a very corticocentric course. Most of the course will deal with the cortex. That's where most of conscious thinking and reasoning and cognition happens. There's a lot of good stuff down in the basement of the brain, and it's going to get pretty short shrift. Okay, not for any good reason, just what it is. Decision making, important field, not getting much coverage in here. Importantly, circuit level mechanisms, explanations of cognition. Like, if you think that we're going to understand not only what it means to understand the meaning of a sentence, but that I'm going to give you a wiring diagram of the neurons that implement that function, sorry to be the bearer of bad news, but nobody has a freaking clue how you could get a bunch of neurons to understand the meaning of a sentence. Okay? So that's exciting. That means there's a field for you guys to waltz into, and probably in your lifetimes, people will start to crack these things, right? But, you know, just to know what we're headed into, rarely, for almost no high-level mental functions, do we have anything like a wiring diagram level understanding of any perceptual or cognitive function, okay? So that's not in the cards for this course because it doesn't exist in the field. Okay, for that kind of thing, there are cases where you can make progress. You can understand, say, fear conditioning in a mouse. Like, those circuits are being, like, cracked wide open by people in this building, people all around the world, with spectacular precision. They know the specific classes of neurons, their connectivity. They know every damn thing about them. But it's like, you know, how does a mouse learn that this thing is to be afraid of this thing? Okay, that's important. But, you know, for more complex aspects of cognition in humans, we can't usually have that kind of circuit level understanding. Lots of other things that will get short shrift. Memory, not for any good reason. I mean, there's a lot of coverage of memory in 900 and 901, and it's just somehow I have a blind spot for understanding, for knowing how to talk interestingly about memory. So I'm not going to give you a boring lecture on memory. Instead, I'm not going to give you any lecture on memory until I learn how to talk about it interestingly. Reinforcement learning and reward systems, I'm going to try to pull some of that in, but it's not going to be a major focus, even though it's a really important part of cognition. Attention, there might be some at the end. Okay. Okay. How many of you have taken 900? Okay, looks like a little over a half. Okay, how many have taken 901? Yeah, a little over half. Okay, good. So, if you have, great, good for you. This course is designed as a tier two course for people who have taken 900 or 901. If you haven't, you're probably okay, but you might need to do a little extra work. And so I've already posted online and in the syllabus information about actually a lecture I gave a year ago on some of the background stuff that is no longer taught in this course. People hated it when I taught them stuff they'd already encountered before, so I'm trying to minimize that. And so that's a backup for those of you who haven't taken these courses. If you're worried about this, chat with me afterwards. I think it will be okay. Just count on doing a little bit of extra work, not much. Okay, for those of us who have taken it, there's going to be a little bit of overlap. It's simply impossible to have zero overlap. I mean, what does John Gabrielli in 900 and Mark Baer in 901 do? They survey the whole broad field, and they pick the coolest stuff out of every little bit, and they teach it to you exactly as they should. But that means that when I come along and try to say, I'm going to do a more intensive coverage of the coolest things, there's going to be a teeny bit of overlap. but I'll try to not make it too much, okay? Just because the coolest stuff is the coolest stuff, right? Also, the spin and the goals of this course are quite different from both 900 and 901. You will have to memorize a few things, but not much. My real goal in this course is to have you understand things, not memorize a sea of disjointed facts. Okay, so a little more on the goals. Really, what I want you to get out of this course is to appreciate the big questions in the field and what is at stake theoretically in each. I want you to understand the methods in human cognitive neuroscience, what each one can tell you, what it can't, how different combinations of methods can work synergistically and complementarily to answer different facets of a question. I do want you to gain some actual knowledge about some of the domains of cognition where we've learned a bunch, both at the cognitive level and the brain level. Things like face recognition, navigation, language understanding, music, stuff like that. Crucially, I want you guys to be able to read current papers in the field. So if you look in the syllabus, the first few papers are like 20 years old, but it's going to accelerate quickly, and you'll be reading papers. I'm trying to choose mostly papers published in the last year or two. Okay? I'm trying to take you straight to the cutting edge of the field. Okay? Yeah?
Are the papers going to be like the papers straight out of research labs, or are they going to be like the annual review?
Nope. Straight out of research labs. You're going to read the real deal, not someone else's blurry, they just read the abstracts and put in some stuff in the review article. No, you're going to read the actual paper. That's the whole deal. Yep. Okay, so those are the goals. Good? A few things. Why no textbook? This field is moving too fast for a textbook. Plus, I have strong opinions, and I don't like any of the textbooks. So any textbook is out of date. We're going to be reading hot stuff that's hot off the press, and so that's not in the textbooks yet, and so we're skipping that, and you're going to go straight to original research articles. So we'll be occasional review articles where relevant, but mostly part of the agenda of this course is to teach you to be not afraid of and able to read current articles in the field. All right, you've all been waiting for this. Okay, details on the grading, pretty standard, midterm 25% of the class, of the grade. Final 25%. It will be cumulative, but weighted toward the second half. There's going to be a lot of reading and writing assignments. Approximately 2 papers to read per week. And for usually one of those papers per week, you will have a very short written assignment in which usually I ask a few simple questions and maybe one like paragraph level think question. The essence of these tasks is not the written assignment itself. The essence of the task is to understand the paper. If you've understood the paper as you read it, then you should be able to answer those questions pretty straightforwardly. And let me just say that understanding a scientific paper is not trivial. When I read a scientific paper right in my area where I have all of the background, it takes me hours. Hours. It may be 5 pages. It still takes me hours. It's just how it is. So when I assign a paper and you say, oh, it's only 3 pages, you know, I can do that in 20 minutes. Oh, no, you can't. No, you can't. Right? And that's part of what I want you to learn how to do, is how to like really read and understand a scientific paper, allocate the time it takes to really get it. Okay, so that's a big part of the agenda in this task. Okay, all the stuff, the assignments and the submission of the assignments will all happen on Stellar. Your first written response to a paper is due February 12th at 6 p.m. on Stellar. But there are other readings that are assigned before that. A note about the schedule. I struggled a lot trying to both have the assignments happen when you had already learned enough in lectures to know how to do it, but have it close enough to the topic at hand so it didn't seem like no longer relevant. That's hard to do both of those things. So the compromise is all of the assignments are due at 6 p.m. the night before the class in which they're assigned. And so if you see that it's assigned, you know, on the 13th, if it's listed on the lecture for the 13th, check carefully. It's probably due the night of the night before. And that's so that we and the TAs can look at it, figure out what you understood, what you didn't, and how to incorporate and explain whatever you didn't get in the next lecture. Okay? All right. Quizzes. I haven't done this before. New thing I'm going to try. There are going to be about 8 of these. They're going to be very brief. They're going to happen at the end of class, in class. And you will do them on your computer or your iPhone using Google Forms. If anybody doesn't have a computer or an iPhone they can bring to class the days of those quizzes, let us know after class and we'll come up with a solution. Okay. And the idea of these is not to fish out an obscure fact that was in one of the reading assignments and, you know, ding you on it. Like, I'm not interested in that. The goal of this is just to keep you up to date, keep you doing the readings, keep you up with the material. And if you basically are understanding what you're reading and understanding the lecture material, maybe you glance at it briefly before, you should do fine on the quizzes. They're just kind of reality checks, right, for us to know what people are getting and not. Okay. Okay, first quiz is February 20th, blah, blah. There is one longer written assignment that is not due with the usual schedule of all the other things. It's due near the end, and in that one you will actually design an experiment in a particular area, and that will be, I don't know yet, 3 to 5 pages, something like that. We'll give you more details on exactly how you want to organize this, and it will be very specific, like state your exact hypothesis, state your exact experimental design, etc., and you'll get practice with those things in advance. All right, so those are the grading and requirements. And this is the, you have this all in the syllabus in front of you. This is the lineup of topics. But very briefly, let me try to give you the arc of the class. So this is the introduction. Next time, we're going to do just a teeny bit of neuroanatomy. There will be a teeny bit of overlap with 900 and 901 there. I'm going to whip through it in very superficial form. I'm doing that largely because on the following class, we have an amazing privilege, which is that one of the greatest neuroscientists alive today, Anne Graybill, will be doing an actual brain dissection right here in this class, right in front of you. It's going to be awesome. I can't wait. It's an incredible privilege. It will be a real human brain, and you guys will be, Anne will be here with all her apparatus, and you guys will be clustered around. And if it's this many, God help us, but we'll figure out how to make it work. Let me just say, if there are listeners in here, I may have to tell listeners they can't come because I'm very sensitive about not having too many people. So stay tuned on that. I haven't quite decided yet. Depends how many people are taking the class. But it's going to be amazing. And I want to remind you of just some basics so you're not asking her, like, what is the hippocampus? Okay, so I know you should all know that, but we'll just do bare basics. Okay, and then we'll have the dissection. That will be great. And also another thing to say is I mentioned that the subcortical regions are going to get short shrift in this class. That's true. But a lot of what you see in a dissection is the subcortical stuff, right? Cortex is great, but it kind of all looks the same. You kind of can't say, oh, that's this region, that's the other region. Well, you can, but it doesn't look any different from any other region. Right? So that's where the subcortical stuff will happen. Okay, so then I'm going to do a couple of lectures that focus on high-level vision, perceiving motion and color and shape and faces and scenes and bodies and stuff like that. And we will use those both to teach you that content and also to teach you the, you know, vast array of methods in this field. Okay, we will then have a lecture on the kind of debates about the organization of visual cortex in humans. I have a particular view. I'm very fond of views that some patches of cortex are very, very functionally specific. Not everyone believes that, so I have assigned readings of people who have different views, and we will consider that. I will try to expose you to the alternate views. And tell you why I'm teaching, why I still believe mine, but why other smart people believe different things, right? Okay, we will then move up the system from perception, and we will spend 2 meetings talking about scene perception and navigation. You got a hint about what an interesting area this is from the story of Bob. We'll consider more what we've learned from studies of patients with brain damage, from functional MRI, from physiology and animals, from cognitive science, from the whole glorious menagerie of methods. To understand navigation, it's a really fascinating area. In the 2 lectures after that, we'll consider development. How do you wire up a brain? How much is present at birth? What is specified in the genes? What is learned? And a lot of that will focus on the navigation system and the face system, simply because that's where there's a lot known, right? We'll consider some other things, but those are 2 areas where there's super exciting work from just the last 3 or 4 years. And so that's what we'll focus on there. I'm then going to do a lecture on brains in blind people. How are they different? How are they the same? What does that tell us? And then you have the midterm. Then we're going to move on and consider number. How do you, like, instantly know that that's 3 fingers and that's 2 without having to do anything all that complicated? And if I had 25 fingers and held them up, you would immediately get a sense that it was about 25. You might not know if it was 22 or 28, but you would know it was about 25. And there are particular brain regions that compute that for you, and we will consider all of that. And there's a very rich array of information from studies of infant cognition, from animal behavior, from brain imaging, from brain damage, from single unit physiology, and from computation, all of which inform our understanding of number. Those are my favorite lectures, but we can take one domain of cognition and inform it with like all of the methods, and number is a really great example. Then we'll talk a little bit about, well, one of my TAs said, call it neuroeconomics, it will sound good. But actually what I'm going to try to do is sort of neuroeconomics, but it will be about pleasure and pain and reward and how we think about those things. Okay. And then that's down to April 3rd. Just as a side note, all of these things are things that are pretty similar between humans and at least primates, and some of them are shared with rodents. Okay. And most of the things after that are things that are really uniquely human. Okay, so we'll be really moving away with less available animal literature to inform the stuff we're looking at, because animals can't do these things. And so necessarily far from the details of individual neurons and circuits, but there's still lots cool that can be said about how you understand speech, how you appreciate music. There will be a guest lecture, just for fun, on brain-machine interface. By Michael Cohen, who's working in my lab now and who has a great lecture on this topic. Then we'll spend a couple lectures on language, how you understand and produce language and what the relevant brain regions are, what we know about it from cognition and lots of other methods, and what the relationship is between language and thought. Then we'll think about how we think about other people. This is called theory of mind, how I can look out at this lecture and try to evaluate from your facial expression. Are they bored, sleepy, overworked, fascinated, excited, all of this kind of stuff that all of us do moment to moment in any conversation, and that, you know, yes, lecturers are doing all the time, even if I know that you guys have too much work and that's why you're sleepy and I shouldn't take it personally. I'm still noticing. Anyway, then we'll go on and consider brain networks. Right, so of course brain function doesn't happen in just a single region, even if we spend a lot of time studying individual regions. There's considerable work trying to figure out which sets of regions work together and how could we discover that, and what are those broader networks of brain regions. And then on May 6th, you will have turned in your longer written assignment designing your own experiment, and then on May 6th, we will work together in groups to refine those experiments and really hash out the details so you actually know how to design an experiment. And then we will have this guest lecture from my postdoc, Katharina Dobbs, on deep nets and what they can tell us about cognition and brains. And then we'll talk about attention awareness. And then I'm not totally sure what we're going to do in the last class, but what I'm voting for is that the amazing TAs each give a short talk on the cool stuff they're doing. But that's under discussion. Okay, that's the arc of the class. Questions? All clear? Great. Well, if I have 5 more minutes, maybe I'll do one other little thing. Let me try this. You asked, I'm going to try to learn everybody's names, but I'm not doing that yet because some of you might not show up and I will have wasted a whole piece of my brain encoding it. No, just kidding. Anyway, I remember that you asked, like, you know, you're going to read current papers. Yes, it is. And you're right. It's daunting. But let me just say a little bit about how to read papers. This is not a stats course and we haven't prerequisited stats. Neither is it a course on the physics of MRI. So there will be parts of every MRI paper that have a lot of gobbledygook. We scanned with this scanning procedure, right? You know, we use this kind of scanner and this kind of blah, blah, blah. Lots of gobbledygook. You guys don't need to worry about that. About the stats, it's kind of a judgment call. Everyone in here should have an idea of what a P-level means. And I hope a sense of what a t-test is and an ANOVA. If you don't, I should probably tell you that offline because that's, you know, pretty basic. But and what a correlation is. Beyond that, just use your intuitions about those things. And this is not a course about understanding the details of the stats in each experiment. There just isn't room to cover all that in the substance of the studies as well. So when you read a paper, for example, here's a paper, a very old paper. You come across this and it's like, okay, here are all these words, like, how, you know, it goes on for 20 pages and like, how do you even dig in? Well, the way to dig in is to start by saying, what question is being asked in this paper? If the paper is well written, you'll be able to find that in the abstract. Blah, 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 to study the effect of face inversion on the human fusiform face area. Okay, we'll talk about that more later. But if you fish through the abstract, you should be able to find what question's being asked, and it's the first thing you should figure out about a paper. Okay? You don't necessarily read a paper, you know, start to beginning through the end. I think it's better to start with this list of questions in your head and look for the answers to those questions, right? Second question, what did they find? If the abstract is well written, you can find that in the abstract as well. Signal intensity from the fusiform face area was reduced when grayscale faces were presented upside down. Okay, kind of boring, but there it is. That's the finding of this paper. Okay. What is the interpretation? Like, in other words, who cares? Like, why? Who, you know, who cares about this? Okay. If you look in here in the abstract, FFA responds to faces per se, rather than to the low-level features present in faces. Okay, we'll talk more about what that means. You guys have an assignment about that, probably several assignments about that kind of question. Okay. Next question you want to ask yourself is, what is the design of this experiment? Often for this, you have to go beyond the abstract. And I should say, for even these earlier questions, sometimes you won't find them in the abstract. That just means the abstract is not well written. But that exists. Okay, to get the design, like what exactly did they do? Usually you have to fit, and you know, what exactly was done? And how were the data analyzed? You need to fish farther. You need to fish around other parts of the paper. And of course, all of those questions, okay, so I just said, okay, what question? And I circled this part, but there are many levels to what question. So you can get more on, you know, why is that inverted question important? You look through usually in the introduction to the paper. Does the FFA respond to faces per se or to a confounding visual feature which tends to be present in faces? Second, is it true that inverted faces cannot engage face-specific mechanisms? Blah, blah, blah. So that gives you a little more background on what the question is, right? There are different levels and depths, okay? So these are all things you want to be looking for when you read a paper. What exactly was done? We measured MRI responses in the FFA to upright and inverted faces, right? I don't expect you to understand all this. These are just giving you schematically how you proceed when you're reading a paper, okay? More on the interpretation or who cares, right? This result would show that face-specific mechanisms are engaged only or predominantly by upright faces, blah, 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 right? You can fish through for those things. Point is to have those questions in your head when you read a paper, okay? It's much more easy and engaging to read something if you have an agenda when you read it. And so your agenda in reading scientific papers is to answer those questions for yourself, right? More stuff, what was the design and logic? Often that's deep in the methods. You have to fish around and find it. There will be some set of conditions and designs. We'll talk more about all of this kind of stuff. What exactly was done, you know, blah, blah, more details. Okay. And this is my example of the kind of gobbledygook that you can ignore, okay? So subjects were scanned on a 1.5T scanner, and there are all these, like this here's the example of said gobbledygook. You can ignore this in this class, right? Every method will have different kinds of gobbledygook. This is MRI gobbledygook. You can ignore it, okay? It matters a lot, but not here. Okay. What else? How are the data analyzed? If you look in the, you know, sometimes there's a data analysis section or a results section or a method section that will tell you. You can find that. Figure it out. Okay. What was the finding? Here's more on the finding. Again, you just fish through for these things. So the point is just when you're reading a paper, it's not necessarily, what I do is I read the title, I read the abstract, and then I start answering those questions for myself. And sometimes at that point, I'm skipping to figures, I'm skipping to methods, any of that is fine, okay? So don't feel like you need to understand each word, especially deep in the methods. I don't know, was that helpful at all? We'll try it, and you guys will give me feedback, and if it works, great, and if not, we'll do more on how to read papers. All right, it's 12:25. See you on Monday.